This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Bonnie North. It's good to have you listening today. We spoke last week with a former CIA official about what he believed were the root causes for the rise of ISIS in the Middle East. Graham Fuller laid the blame in large part on U.S. military action in Iraq.
On the same day Fuller was in Milwaukee to talk about Middle Eastern policy, another former high-ranking foreign policy leader was here, also to talk about national security. Thomas McNamara served in a variety of senior levels in the Foreign Service, including U.S. Ambassador to Colombia in the Reagan administration and senior advisor to the Secretary of State for Counterterrorism and Homeland Security following the 9/11 attacks. Ambassador McNamara, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Let me start with a big picture question. Has anything the United States has done really in the last decade made the world a safer, more secure place?
I think yes. We've done a number of things. Most of those things that have made it safer and secure have not been headline-making events, but in fact have been useful and very important developments that have built the economy, particularly since the downturn of 07, 08, in a way that probably would not have occurred had the United States assumed, in effect, that role of trying to lead the world economy back. Europe is still in a mess economically. China was part of the reason why we were able to do that because it's such a large trading partner of ours. But Japan has not recovered. And indeed, even in the last year or so, China has begun to slip. That happens with export-dominant economies, and China is definitely an export-dominant economy, as is Japan. So we don't depend as much on the world economy for the basic level of economic activity here in the United States, but we do critically depend upon the world economy for rising above that basic level and having what you would call a good year or a good decade.
Well, and so would you contend that the economic fate of Europe and China and Japan at this point remains kind of a global security issue?
I would say less a security issue than a global economic issue. But economics is involved with security, obviously. People who are relatively well off, who feel secure economically, are going to be undertaking activities, taking risks even, that they would not do in a time of economic uncertainty.
In terms of more direct security issues, they seem to exist right and left, and as has been the case for many years, a lot of them can be traced to the Middle East. What do you think is responsible for the rise of ISIS in the Middle East?
The rise of ISIS is just a single event, a single episode in a much larger conflict that has been going on in the Middle East now for a generation. And it is or has become basically an Islamic civil war. It goes well beyond the Middle East even, although this epicenter of the war is in the Middle East. But it's spilling over now after all these years into other regions and in the Islamic world. It is merely the most recent demonstration of the disaffection and the social disorder in the Islamic world. We saw it earlier with things like al-Qaeda, and al-Qaeda is still a dangerous and significant threat in the Islamic world, not to us any longer. ISIS is merely the latest manifestation. As al-Qaeda slipped from a predominant role, ISIS has moved in. But there are other things going on in other parts of Islam, such as Boko Haram in Africa, and various movements in, particularly in Pakistan, to a lesser extent in Indonesia, which are similar given the geography and the history and the societies that they're functioning in. They're different, but they represent the same basic insecurity and an instability that ISIL or ISIS represents.
Is there a certain role that kind of the decentralization of Islam plays in allowing these movements, whether we're talking about ISIS or Boko Haram or any in the past Al-Qaeda? Is that one of the factors that plays into how these movements arise?
I believe we are witnessing a fundamental shift in Islamic society that hasn't occurred since about the time of the First World War and the disruptions of the – and the fall of the last caliphate, the Ottoman Empire. Out of this, I can't begin to predict what we will see, except that it will be an Islamic world that is substantially different from the one that we've seen in the last 70 or 80 years.
Do you think there's anything that U.S. foreign policy has done, whether it's our military action in Iraq or more recently in Syria, that has fomented this to any degree?
Well, certainly not in Syria. That's definitely not a fomenting action that we've taken. Yes, very definitely. I believe, and I've said this frequently, that our invasion of Iraq in 2003 was a fundamental mistake on the part of the United States. It was a what I would call a strategic error. And the error is that we went in, at least superficially, supposedly, to get rid of terrorists that were inside Iraq and to get rid of WMD, weapons of mass destruction, that were inside of Iraq. But in fact, the motivating force behind it was an attempt to restructure Iraq society and politics, and indeed to have a basic transformation of Middle East social and political order. We indeed are seeing that happen, but not in the way that we expected. Iraq has been part of the reason for the rapid eruption of what I think otherwise would have happened over time in many Islamic countries, particularly Arab Islamic countries. We simply, by going into Iraq, if you will, stimulated what was already a very difficult situation.
Do you believe is ISIS, or Islamic State as some refer to it, is that organization as it exists as an organization, is it trying to bait the U.S. into something in the Middle East right now?
I don't think so. I think they have very specific goals and objectives which they're attempting to achieve, and they've been successful in some of them, and others they haven't. It's not that they're baiting us, but they certainly are using the United States to demonstrate their power. They're doing very much the same thing as Al-Qaeda did in 2001 and even earlier than that in the attacks on the American embassies in Africa and the attack on the coal in Aden. They're trying to use these attacks and the beheadings, those gruesome and brutal, barbaric scenes on the videotape, to stimulate the growth of their organization by encouraging recruitment and by encouraging contributions from outside sources. They see it as not so much they want to do anything to the United States as they want to demonstrate their power. And what better way to demonstrate it by going after the world's most powerful nation?
How would you suggest that we begin to unpack that morass then?
I think we begin to unpack it by very consciously deciding what our priorities are with respect to that morass. And getting deep into it certainly should not be one of our priorities. We have a lot of other priorities that are going to take our resources and where we ought to spend our resources and our capabilities. But I do think we have a role to play, particularly in that we do not want to see ISIS or the Islamic State succeed. And there is a role to be played possibly – I hope there is anyway, as a unifier of the many opponents of that organization. What you see in the Middle East today is that most of the Middle East is opposed to ISIS. but they have such conflicting motives for that opposition, and they have such conflicting goals and objectives that they wish to see for their own national reasons or for their own religious reasons, that they are unable to come together. If they were able to come together, the ISIS problem would be substantially less, and the opportunity, if you will, to push ISIS back into the background where it came from would be much greater. So I see the U.S. role as trying to stimulate the countries in the region to take on the task, not to take it on ourselves. We made that mistake in Afghanistan. We successfully functioned in Afghanistan at the very beginning in an effort to simply dislodge the Taliban and al-Qaeda from running Afghanistan by controlling Kabul and the regional capitals. We then went further and added to that relatively simple and comparatively less ambitious goal and objective to one of remaking and nation building in Afghanistan and transforming Afghanistan and its relationship with Pakistan and the rest of South Asia. We have not been successful in that. And the result is that plus the drawdowns that were necessary in Afghanistan to fund and to undertake the operations in Iraq led to essentially an aborted effort in Iraq, in Afghanistan.
There was a time when so many of the world's conflicts were proxies for the clash between superpowers. Are there any remnants of that world around today?
Not very many that I don't think of any. I think the superpower clashes, which, by the way, went on for almost half a century, in fact, just about a half a century, were primarily in the economic, social, and cultural arena and not in the military arena. Thank God, because a direct clash would have been quite disastrous for everybody, not just the two superpowers. What happened when the one superpower, the Soviet Union, disappeared from view is that the remaining superpower, the United States, and its allies and partners around the world should, in my opinion, have taken that opportunity and have readjusted and reexamined their strategic objectives. We failed to do that for the most part. We did some of it, but not nearly enough given the revolutionary results of the Cold War. I mean, just think of it. In a few short years, one superpower disappeared. The entire eastern half of Europe transformed itself into a new political, social, and economic system. To a lesser extent, so also did a good portion of Central Asia. The Chinese, who until then had been what Napoleon referred to as the sleeping giant, was awakening. And so many other changes came in the world political, economic, and social scene that it was, I think, a great mistake not to have pulled back for a few years and taken a look to see what the new priorities ought to be. We all knew what the old priorities were. But if you ask an American, what is the priority now? The answer is, I'm not sure. And it turns out to be the latest headline or the latest particular pressure group that gains a voice and a position publicly, or some partisan objective that is in all of those cases I mentioned are not necessarily our national interests.
Well, Ambassador Thomas McNamara, thank you so much for your insights.
You're very welcome.
Thomas McNamara was a former U.S. ambassador to Colombia and senior State Department official on counterterrorism issues. He's now on the adjunct faculty at the Elliott School of International Affairs at George Washington University. He was in Milwaukee last week to speak at a variety of venues, including Marquette University and the Rotary Club of Milwaukee.
You can find a link to an op-ed he wrote for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel on U.S. strategy in the Middle East from WUWM.com/lake effect.
We'll take a quick break now, and then we'll have an update from the front lines of stem cell research. You're listening to Lake Effect on WUWM.